Well, my husband, I mentioned he is an entrepreneur at heart, and he had built a couple of businesses and had sold one and really wanted the next business to be something focused on strengthening families. And so creating a culture that supports both of those things was a huge priority coming right out of the gate for my husband and I. And so now, you know, almost 10 years later, to see it working the way that we had hoped and then winning awards, being recognized for that.
Thanks for joining me, Vanessa.
Yeah. Thanks.
We're just going to roll. I don't have any fancy intros.
Okay.
So cool. That's good. So, author.
Okay. Yes.
Mother of seven.
Yes.
That's crazy. And owner, CEO of Chatbooks.
Oh, I'm actually not CEO. I love when people say that. My husband is my business partner and he is a CEO. He has a Harvard MBA. Like he should definitely be the CEO. I gave myself my own title. I am Chatbooker in Chief.
Chatbooker in Chief.
Which basically means I do whatever I want. I have a say on everything.
Yes.
I'm the voice of the people, our customer, the Chatbooker.
Yes.
I get to help, you know, weigh in on product decisions, do a lot in marketing.
Yes.
And I'm on the executive team and
there you go. You know, that's why you
I
need
sleep
it.
With the CEO, so I have a little bit of influence.
That's great. That is perfect. That's awesome. I was going to say, when I let people know that we were doing this interview, because we met with Brooke, we got this interview set up, and I was like, yeah, Vanessa Quigley, like, okay, I'm naive, like Chatbooks. I'm like, I know what it is. I've seen like the billboards and everything. And then my wife freaks out. I know I have a friend, we have a mutual friend. She owns a podcast called The Mamahood Podcast. She's like, you have Vanessa Quigley coming out. And so I had to do my research.
Okay.
I had to do way more research. But I'm really excited you're here. Chatbooks has been around for quite a while.
We officially started in 2014. That was when the first chatbook came off the presses.
And here's my question for you, because you're an entrepreneur now, but you were an actress and a trained opera singer.
Yep.
How did, tell me the backstory of growing up. Oh, you want to be an actress and an opera singer, but then you turn into an entrepreneur. That's a wild transition.
Yeah, it is wild. I actually never thought I would be an entrepreneur. My family is very entrepreneurial. I mean, my dad's a lawyer, but he started his own practice and always had a little side something going on. We started a nursery in our backyard. We lived on 5 acres in rural Florida, and I'm the oldest of 12. And so with our property, my dad, we had a little petting zoo, which, you know, we would bring our friends over to, you know, look at the animals. But also it was like a brilliant way to get the kids working. You know, we had a cow we had to milk. And we all got assigned a species of animal. My brother Jacob was in charge of the chickens. I had some goats. But then he planted this big pine tree nursery. And it was a business that helped, all the profits from that went to help my brothers with their missions and...
Very cool.
Yeah, so it was called Mission Pine Nursery. It was mostly for their missions. And he now, my dad, since he's retired, he started a wild animal park and an airboat operation in Central Florida. If you go to Central Florida, go to Disney, go to Universal, and then go to Wild Florida, it'll blow your mind.
Florida is kind of this crazy part of the country.
It is a wild frontier. Yeah. I'm seventh generation Floridian. So that's where my roots are. I've been here in Utah now for 10 years. I'm kind of shocked. This is where we've ended up. It's been an incredible place to build a business, but I am kind of getting antsy to get back to Florida.
You want to go back?
Yeah.
Good for you. That's awesome.
But growing up in my big family, you know, my parents just always told us we could do anything. Like, my mom especially was so good at just telling me, anything you want to do, you can do. And I love to sing and I love to perform. And my goal was to be on Broadway.
Yeah.
And so when I came to BYU, I just went into the music building and I was like looking for anyone to tell me anything. And I saw a flyer hanging on the wall about singers come audition for the vocal program. And so I was like, okay I'm going. And I did think it was odd when they asked me to sing an aria in a hymn. Because I was like, okay, well, this is BYU. I don't know. We do things different here. I had no idea I was auditioning for the classical music department, opera, because I didn't really know anything about opera up to that point.
Okay.
And I go to my first couple classes, and the assignment was everyone had to, like, sing a solo and just kind of, like, get to know your get to know everyone in the class. Yeah. And everyone's singing in different languages. And I was like, I am in the wrong place. But I was so scared to speak up because I was just like, what have I done? I am out of my element. And by the time I finally said something to my professor, he's like, yeah, ad drops, you've missed it. You're stuck in here. And something about that semester and the challenge, like, you know, I'd been singing just like show tunes and like, you know, yeah. with the choir, but like classical music is very technical. And I loved the, like, all of the Italian words for the technique, and just, it just seemed yeah. like this awesome, huge challenge and this whole new world to explore. And I stuck with it. And that's what I got my degree in, is vocal performance and pedagogy.
Wow.
Yeah. And the plan was to go pursue a professional operatic career.
Yeah. Like New York, Broadway.
Well, you actually, a lot of operatic careers start overseas. And my husband and I both really wanted to live overseas. And so we were like, oh, we're going to graduate. We'll go to Europe and you can sing. And
yeah.
But then I had a baby.
Okay.
And before I graduated, which was it was a little bit of a surprise, but yeah. That kind of shifted my priorities, and I didn't end up with an international operatic career. I did sing a lot, but yeah, it kind of, that changed the course of my life a lot.
Wow. Okay. So you have your first child, kind of changes. Is that when you were like, man, I got to be an entrepreneur? Like, I got to...
You know, there was a moment I was really into scrapbooking. When I had my first baby,
okay.
I really felt like documenting our life story was an important job to be done. My mom was so good at doing this.
Okay.
Well,
everybody has the baby books. And,
actually, because yeah. I'm the oldest, I have a baby book. I don't know if any other of my siblings do. Well, you have 12.
That's a tall order right, for anybody.
But mom did a good job of keeping like the family scrapbook. And I wanted that for my family. So I was really into scrapbooking, and we were living in Provo at the time, and yeah. there was a store called Pebbles in My Pocket where I would go to get all of my scrapbooking supplies. And so when we graduated from BYU and we moved to California, I'm like, where am I going to get hooked up with my stuff? I got it. And so I had this brilliant idea. I'm going to open a scrapbooking store.
Okay.
Like, this is something that I know I'm passionate about. And because my mom had instilled in me that I can do anything I want, I start looking for space on Montana and Santa Monica. Okay, because we were lucky enough to get a rent control apartment in Santa Monica.
Yeah,
I could not afford retail space in Santa Monica.
No one can afford retail space in Santa Monica.
And then I got pregnant again. And anyway, that was my one and only entrepreneurial flash in the pan idea.
Okay.
But my husband, he just had a bleeding heart for starting businesses, and he started his career in management consulting, which is a great foundation to learn, you know, mechanics of business and see a lot of different ways of doing business. And after business school, he started a company and started another company. And he kept talking to me about, what is the thing that we're going to do together? And I'm like, nothing. You do that. I'm doing my thing. Like, I had absolutely no desire to build a business, and especially not with him. I love him.
Okay. Yeah.
Building a family with him.
Yeah.
But like, I'm the boss of my world. You're the boss of your world. Like, I just did not think that was a recipe for a happy life.
Okay.
But I've been proven wrong. It's been seriously the best 9 years of our marriage, as we have grown so much closer. Okay. I have so much more respect for what he did in his career up to this point, because honestly, I didn't care what he was doing. Like, he would go, raise money, or, you know, all that is involved in building a business.
Yeah.
And all I cared about, are you going to be home in time to help put the kids to bed? Or can you go pick up the kids from soccer? You know?
Yeah.
And I feel really badly about that, because, you know, as we started building this business together, and I feel the weight of responsibility, and, you know, it's hard to go pitch to raise money to keep your business afloat. Like, those are some of the more stressful moments of our journey. And to just be like, honey, I had no idea this is what you were doing all those years. I'm so sorry. And he doesn't care. He doesn't hold a grudge. He's happy that we're doing it together.
I was going to say, I've had that happen with me and my wife. Like, for a second, my wife was like, I want to help you in your business and everything. And then she quickly was like, nah, never mind. Like, you can go hire an assistant, do your thing. But we had that conversation one time where she said almost the exact same thing. She's like, I didn't even kind of understand.
Yeah.
But as, I don't know, in my case, I feel like I was in the same boat as your husband. Like, I didn't care. Like, it's fine. We're, you know, I'm going to be there for the kids' games. I'm going to take them to wrestling. I'm going to do all that anyway.
Yeah. I don't think he expected me to be like super invested, but
yeah.
Now looking back, I'm like, if you had been talking to me about this, maybe we could have made some different choices, or maybe this would have gone different, but whatever. Hindsight's 2020.
Yeah. Amen.
It's been really, really an incredible opportunity and education for me these last 10 years to get to do this together with him.
That's awesome. Okay, now you're going to have to refresh my memory. Was the book, you've written a couple books.
One
book, yeah. Real Moms? I thought there was a second book.
Real Moms, Real Hacks.
Okay.
I've been toying with another book, but I've always got a million little things percolating in my brain. Okay. But I wrote a book. It was actually a collaboration with lots of moms all over the country. That's about cool. Little ways to hack your way through mom life. You know, there's a lot to it. And you know, as you go through and have your own experiences, you find little tips and tricks that make your life easier. So it was a compilation of those along with some of the things that I've learned through my mothering and that I've learned from watching my mom raise 12 kids.
Yeah, 12 kids, that's a lot. Yeah, and then, I grew up in 5, my wife grew up in 7. Is that what led you to having 7 kids? Like, was that always a goal for you to have that many?
Not 7. I will say 6 was actually the number I was aiming for.
Okay.
As coming from a family of 12, and then my husband's from a family of 3. And so I thought, well, I really liked a big family, but that was kind of extreme. And he really thought that, like, maybe it'd be nice to have a bigger family than 3. So we just thought we'd meet in the middle and we'd aim for 6. And then Declan came, my baby.
That was it.
He was a surprise, lucky number 7. And
Well, that's amazing.
It's amazing. I know.
That's incredible.
It is a lot, though. I will say, there has been once or twice that the thought has popped in my mind, I made a horrible mistake. I have too many children.
You're like, this is insane. How do you, you wrote the book, Real Moms. You deal with moms all the time. You, what was 4-time Women in Tech?
Yeah.
You know, nominee or Women Tech Council?
Yes.
All of that. How do you deal with that internally of like, because everybody has it. Everybody has that, oh man, I have 2 kids and I'm sometimes like, oh man. I have a daughter that I teach to be really independent, really fierce. And that's how she was born. And she's like that. And sometimes it backfires on me. Yeah. And sometimes I'm like, oh, but how do you talk with moms about some of that? Maybe I've heard the term like mom guilt or something like that. Or like they have that thought in their head and then they get really down on themselves and motherhood's such a beautiful thing. But what kind of conversations do you have like that?
Oh my gosh. Moms? That is the conversation. It comes up around every topic. mom guilt is real. It's insidious. It's human to have that response, especially when you're looking back and you think, oh, I missed an opportunity or I could have done something differently. My oldest is 28 and my youngest is 15 now. We only have 2 kids at home. And so there's a lot of looking back and being like, oh, I wonder. But I'm really good at just like saying I did the very best I could with what I knew and we're going to move forward.
Yeah.
And I really believe that I'm the perfect mom for my kids. Like, there's no such thing as a perfect mom, but I'm the perfect mom for them. Like, that is my faith. I have to believe that. That is what I preach. And then you just do the best you can. And you know, kids are resilient. They're forgiving. And so if as a mom, you're willing to keep learning and you're willing to admit that you've made a mistake and you want to do better. I was just having a conversation with a girlfriend of mine. I mean, we're in our 50s now, right?
Okay.
And I'm taking this course on communication, mainly to communicate with my baby, my 15-year-old. He has a very different communication style.
It's
I knew what I was doing. You would think by number 7, you know, you're just like working the machine. Like it's a process. But no, every personality is very, very different. So my husband and I are taking this communication course and I'm like, it's blowing my mind. Like, how much better off would all of our other kids have been if we actually knew how to communicate in a healthy way?
Yeah.
How much better would our marriage have been? But there's no like regrets, no looking back. You only do better.
Right, you just keep going,
You only do better. Except my girlfriend, everyone needs a friend who just says what's on their mind.
Like there's no filter.
Right,
just comes out.
She's like, I'm not doing that. I'm just like, it shouldn't be that much work. I'm not going to be catering to anybody's needs. Anyway, she came back. This is a conversation on Marco Polo. She came back the next one. Okay, I can see where there's wisdom in that. You can teach an old dog new tricks. And Anyway, mom guilt, it's a thing. It pops in your mind and then you just have to replace it with another thought. Like, I'm doing the best I can.
Yeah.
And I'm just going to try better the next day. Yeah.
Yeah, I got to keep going. I love that. And I've had a lot of women in business on here. I mean, I mentioned Women in Tech, Women Tech Council.
Yeah.
I've had Tanya Brown, Sid Tetro. I've had Mackenzie Bauer.
All amazing.
Mixers. Yeah. Jess Toulson. I've had them all. And we talk about motherhood because it's something that I think is overlooked. I love sharing these interviews with my wife and my daughter and all my, and all their friends and stuff because, it is something that I think unfortunately does get overlooked quite a bit. I think the roles as parents, can just even fathers, like I have another podcast called the Fatherhood Podcast. Because I don't know why those roles just sometimes they get overlooked and people just get like so invested in what other people think mom should be or something like that and forget like the tribe that's around mothers and fathers and stuff like that.
Yeah. And there's no one right way to be a mom. I mean, the best piece of advice my husband gave me when we started our business was there's no one right way to be an entrepreneur. All of a sudden we had started this business and I was, in the public representing the company and speaking. And I felt so insecure because I don't have a business degree. I don't have any experience in this. But my husband's like, no, you're the perfect person to be building this business. You're building a solution for busy moms. That is what you are. Like, you don't need to know all the lingo. You're the perfect entrepreneur for this. And so that idea just like, it gave me permission to just show up as myself. Like, I might not know what a flywheel is. I remember the first interview when someone asked me about the flywheel effect and I'm like, I really have no idea what you're talking about.
You're like, dog, I'm making scrap.
Makes a lot of sense to me now. You know, I've had a lot more experience, but like as a brand new entrepreneur in the business world for the first time, there was a lot that I didn't know.
Okay.
And the same goes for parenting. Like you just don't know. They send you home with a child and literally like, you know, you have your experience growing up and what your parents did for better or for worse, you know, but there's no one right way to do it. You just do the best you can. And, you know, with social media as a parent or even as an entrepreneur, you can get sucked into seeing what everyone else is doing and think, oh, I need to show up like that. And I need to be doing that. And I should be doing that. And that's what like triggers that guilt. And then you end up getting paralyzed and you do nothing. But just own who you are as an individual, as an, you know, a unique entrepreneur or as a parent. And you just do you.
Yeah. Yeah, that's incredible. So let me go back to the business though. You said it started in 2014. How was that? You had the flash in the pan thing, little scrapping thing in California. You write a book and then, I mean, how does Chatbook start?
How does it start?
Yeah, what happened?
Well, my husband, I mentioned he is an entrepreneur at heart and he had built a couple of businesses, and had sold one and really wanted the next business to be something focused on strengthening families. Our oldest was getting ready to graduate from high school. We felt like, you know, nothing's ever going to be the same. We want to hold on to this forever. And he, for a couple of years, had been building basically enterprise software for families to help organize memories, photos, videos, audio clips, journal entries,
cool.
All in the cloud. Like a really good idea, a noble idea, but the software that was being built.
You had to step in and be like,
I had to use it because it was my husband and this is where we're putting our savings into. But I would be like, oh yeah, this is great. But can I get this in a book? And he's like, no. Print is dead. We're not doing books. This is all going to be safe in the cloud so that we can share it. And I was like, oh, okay, Mr. Harvard MBA, I guess you know what you're doing. And so years of doing that, assembling my girlfriends to come and like do a user group and like give their feedback. All of their feedback was pretty much the same as mine. Like, oh, this is great. I should do this, which by the way, should is the trigger word. Should means I will never do it.
Yeah, that's right.
And then eventually the question would come up, can I get this all in a book? And this is a tricky thing for entrepreneurs is to like differentiate your like unique product vision and the feedback you're getting from other people.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah, yeah.
And I think it's a delicate balance because in hindsight, you know, we would have listened more. And by we, I mean he would have listened more to the feedback because for years he was building this thing that just nobody really wanted to use. And so, and we had even moved our family from Florida where we were happily living a couple blocks from the beach. I had already planned out where I was going to host all the kids' wedding receptions. This was the house we were going to live in for the rest of our lives. And my husband came to me and he's like, we got to move to Utah. Like, there's this unbelievable ecosystem there for entrepreneurs. If we're going to build a company that is focused on families, like, Utah is the place to be. Family history. Like,
yeah.
I just have a really good feeling about this. I did not have a good feeling about it. Because actually, when I graduated from BYU, I told my husband, I don't even want to walk. Like, we're not getting me out of here. We're never going back. Like, yeah. I love my experience at BYU, but I'm a Florida girl. I need to be, like, on the coast. Anyway, we mutually decided that this was worth an attempt to come to Utah to see if we could get this thing that he had kind of been investing in and building could get some traction. And so we moved our whole family here after my oldest graduated from high school.
Okay.
And for a year, he was trying to get it to go. Like, rented a room, or not even a room, a corner of a little office in the Riverwoods, hired some guy that was working at Subway making a sandwich to come in and help with something. Like, it was like real grassroots, scrappy, but it just wasn't really going anywhere. And, you know, after being here for a year, completely uprooting our family, we basically spent all of our savings. I felt emboldened. I actually felt like I had a right to speak up now too, because I'm like, we are invested in this and you have a lot of good ideas. You're really, really smart, but this isn't serving us. It's not serving me. This isn't the solution that I want. And so I had this experience with my youngest son who was getting ready to go to kindergarten, and he was like the happiest boy in the world. So when I heard him just sobbing, I thought there was going to be blood, like something horrible's happened. But no, he was just in bed holding a little photo book that his preschool teacher had given him for preschool graduation. He'd been looking through it and reminiscing about his little young life up to that point. And it was emotional for him.
Yeah,
and he told me.
But that's a beautiful story. I laugh because that is beautiful.
It's a great origin story, let me tell you. Anyway, he told me that he never wanted to grow up. I had that overwhelming sense of mom guilt that I had failed in helping him hold on to the story of his life. I still had all my scrapbooking supplies, but it had been years since I had actually done anything with it. I hauled it all around in moves after move, but you know, life is busy. Like, I don't have time to pull out all that stuff and do a big project. But I still really believed in the power of holding on to our story. So emboldened with that weight of the guilt, and also the fact that we live in Utah now, and we, for what? I marched downstairs and I told my husband, look, you have got to figure out how to print my Instagram. Like, we're never going to use what you built. No one's going to use it. Like, can you just figure out a way to print my Instagram? Because I had been using Instagram basically my son's whole life, not necessarily thinking it was a journal, but just as a way to keep in touch with family. You know, we've moved around a lot. I have a big family. That was just a super easy way to share photos and a little like blurb about what we're doing. But I realized that sometimes I would lay in bed and I would scroll back through my feed to like,
my own
profile. Yeah, to be like, oh yeah, look at, I'm a good mom. We're a good family. We do fun things and we've had a good life, you know, that like served me in a unique way. And I wanted that for my kids. And I'm like, there's gotta be a way with all this software and technology, just magically make my books. Well, anyway, there was a way. He was in a position where he was starting to doubt like if this thing he'd built was ever going to work. He thought I had a good idea. And so they did a hack week, pivoted his little dev team. They had a prototype that we started showing people. And the response was very different from, oh yeah, I should totally do this. It was, people were saying, shut up, take my money. I need this.
Yeah.
And we were off to the races.
That was it.
That was it.
That's crazy.
So it started as a way to print your Instagram, because like me, a lot of moms had been using Instagram basically as a journal.
And I think that's what it was originally, wasn't it? Yeah. It was like a photo thing. It was just a way to like get your, it was like, I think it was like an online scrapbooking thing.
Well, it's not now.
No, it's
not. We all know.
I haven't had Instagram for 7 years.
Yeah. It's wild.
Yeah. I don't get on.
So when we started the business and it was printing your Instagram and, you know, things were booming and we were like at capacity at the print shop and it was so exciting.
Yeah.
Instantly we're like, okay, but what if Instagram, you know, cuts us off or dies or whatever? Like, I don't want to be beholden to Instagram. So we immediately started figuring out like, how can we help people make automatic photo books? Cause that was our tagline, directly from their camera roll without having to go through Instagram. And it's taken a little while to get there, but now we've got a subscription model that only like less than 20% of the photos that we print come from Instagram or social media. It's mostly
camera rolls. Yeah. Stuff like that. Well, I think that's amazing. And I remember I had that moment too. My aunt, my auntie, she was a big scrapbooker. Mm-hmm. And I got home from serving an LDS mission and she told my uncle came up to me. I lived with them after my mission. And he was like, you know, one of the biggest reasons I went on a mission was because we'd all get around on Sunday and after somebody had talked in church about serving a mission and we would open my dad's mission book and it would have just pages of everything that happened. And my aunt was like, you're probably never going to use it, but here it is. Like they had made me one from all the pictures that I had sent home and we sat there and put it together and made it. And, I probably look at that with my kids every Sunday.
That's amazing.
And it's just like, if they serve a mission, sweet. If they don't, I don't really care. Yeah. But it's like the stories, like, Dad, who was that? Yeah. Or like, tell me that story. Yeah. There's also a lot of funny pictures. It's not only the pictures of whatever we were doing, but it's also the funny ones that we sent back.
Yes, freaked mom
out or whatever.
Okay, so you were touching on so many great points. And this is why I'm passionate about our business. Is that there is magic in looking at printed photos. And we actually did a study with HP. We partnered with HP Chapbooks. We surveyed 20,000 families to measure the impact of looking at printed photos because a lot of, you know, most of our photos are on our phones or on our computers or on the tablet. And if our kids want to look at our photos, you've got to hand them a device or put them in front of a computer.
Oh, yeah.
You know, if anything, we're trying to get cut down screen time from kids.
Yeah.
But it's the conversations that happen around looking at printed photos is where the magic has. And so hearing you talk about the conversations you have around those photos, those conversations are linked to so many positive outcomes, like increased self-esteem, better problem solving, lower instances of anxiety. It helps parents feel like they're doing a better job. Like overall, it helps strengthen families. And that's our mission at Chapbooks. It's like painted on the wall in our HQ. Our mission is to strengthen families. And looking at printed photos and having conversations, chatting those photos, Chapbooks, that's where the magic happens. And so, you know, whether it's a scrapbook that your auntie makes for you or it's a chapbook, like you just got to get the photos off of your devices into the hands of your family so you can have those connecting conversations that will strengthen you.
And isn't that crazy you said something really funny that I think is, from my experience, is pretty bold for anybody to say. And that is blank, insert anything here is dead.
Yeah.
Like, for a long time, like I'm in sales and marketing. So my company is sales and marketing. And for like so many times I hear cold calling's dead, email's dead. And I'm like, dude, that's just dangerous. So like,
I know, but you know, people like to have a hot take, you know, it like makes you feel powerful. And I think when he was saying that, you know, we had 7 kids, we felt like we were bursting at the seams in our house. It was like, the last thing we need is more junk in this house.
I have to keep my eye on him.
He's constantly throwing stuff away, getting rid of stuff. And so I think for him, the thought of like adding more stuff into our house just felt insane.
Okay.
Like, what's the priority here? Like, If we could have a shelf of photo books that will help our kids know what they're capable of, where they came from, know their self-worth, know where, how they fit into our family in this narrative of like our family. Mm-hmm. Like I would rather have that than the Nintendo or the ping pong table, or like, I can think of a million things I'd like to get out of my house.
Yeah.
But those are, they're precious, they're powerful. And print is not dead.
Print's never dead. I thought that for a minute when I was buying books, but I told my wife, I heard this quote growing up that was like, somebody said that their library, you know, something about a person if their library is bigger than their TV, if their TV is bigger than their library. And I was like, I never want my kids to my TV is bigger than my library. So I just started buying printed books.
Yeah.
And, my, my kids have graduated to actually like their own books now. But when they were little, they would read my books, and I thought it was pretty cool.
Aww.
But they were, my books are boring. I had a lot of philosophy and like religious books. And
oh, yeah, yeah. We have they were that
like,
too.
They've graduated like Captain Underpants.
Yeah. Aww. Well, I will say when we started the business, it was so excited to actually see people using it, like,
yeah.
and know what chapbooks is. Like, it would always blow my mind. People like, oh, I love chapbooks. I'm like, you do, you know, because it had been years of like building this thing that nobody cared about. But I will say the biggest payback was when I came into the family room and my son, who was just like, he's addicted to video games. He was like six at this time.
Sure.
All he wanted to do was play video games. That was like all he and his friends ever wanted to do. And I walk in and he's on the couch and he's got two buddies on either side of him and they just have a stack of chapbooks and he's in the center, kind of holding court, and they're all looking at this book as he's telling them the story of all of these photos page after page.
Yeah.
And I was like, oh my gosh, that is my proudest mom moment right there. Like seriously, nothing else would get four boys, wild, rowdy boys to sit on a couch. And they were there for a long time.
Yeah.
But hearing the stories behind the photos, it's just powerful.
And they're just laughing telling stories.
And thinking it's incredible.
Do you remember this?
Yeah.
Yeah, I think that's great. What do you think? I think we're getting back to that, but I don't know. I grew up in the Midwest. And so printed books were like, that was the thing. Like, mm-hmm. And I just remember everybody did that. The old sitcom moment where like you bring your first date home and your mom sits them down and shows them the scrapbook or whatever. Yeah, that was like my growing up. Do you feel like chapbooks has played a big role in bringing that back? Because I feel like sometimes they get lost in these big cities. You know what I mean? Like we don't have that anymore.
For sure. I mean, there are other companies that can make a photo book for you.
Sure.
But the thing that really set us apart was that it was like super easy, automatic. Like I had an experience where I did my handmade scrapbooks for years and years and years. And then we got a digital camera and all of a sudden I didn't have to take my film to Costco to get it developed. Right. And I had these digital photos and I'm like, well, I guess maybe I should try making a photo album online. And, you know, I went to Shutterfly and I started making a baby book for my daughter, Isabel.
Yeah.
And somehow I got lost in the process because there are so many decisions to be made, like the size of the book, the color of the book, the design of the book, the font of the book, the layout of the book, and it's just like, it was too much. And my brain just like went on overload and I abandoned the project. I didn't even realize this until we were like a couple years into starting chapbooks. And something came up about Shutterfly and I'm like, oh yeah, I used to have an account. I'm going to go back and see. We were like curious about their workflow or something.
Yeah.
And, I recovered my password and I open it up and I'm like, oh my gosh, I have a book here that I never finished. And I did feel motivated in that moment to just like slap down some captions and print it out. But, you know, busy families, you don't have time for a 100-hour project to create the perfect photo book. But we created software that allowed people to just, with a click of a button, pull in the photos that they want. We format it to you. You don't have to like decide on fonts or layouts or color schemes or whatever. It just takes all of that friction away and it lets you just get the thing that you want in your hands. And kids are not that picky. They don't care.
No.
They don't care what font you use.
Well, shoot. I mean, I know that like, so I had my auntie, she loved making scrapbooks. She had a whole room, but I know most people are just like my wife, for example, I told her about chapbooks and we went on and it was just nice. Cause it was just like, pick the photos, put them in there because it's a story more than anything.
Yes,
right? Like,
yes, yes.
I mean, it's cool if they look pretty, but I think, and they look,
well,
and chapbooks
and they do
look pretty.
Pretty. They do look pretty.
I was going to say, I have ADHD. Yeah. I had to back up, but yeah, I think they do look pretty, but it's more of like the power of like those moments.
Yes.
Yeah.
And I always say that, parents, moms especially moms. Are our customer, but kids are the consumers. Like they're the ones who really,
they love that. Huh?
They gravitate to them. They love them. Sometimes they love them too much. We actually have a toddler guarantee that if you know, sometimes we'll literally consume the book. Email us. We'll reprint it for you. Because these are meant to be a joy. They're not archival. They're not meant to be archival. Set up on the shelf.
Yeah.
Like don't touch unless mom's supervising.
Right.
They are archival. I mean, we use good quality products, but they're meant to be used and enjoyed and.
Yeah, like put through the ringer. That's really cool. I kind of want to talk about, since, you know, as we kind of wrap up a little bit, but I wanted to talk about just your journey in chapbooks because you've won a lot of awards. Like I mentioned, the Women Tech Council one. Obviously, you've been in a lot of publications. What's like if you were telling the story of chapbooks or like your best accomplishment to somebody, and you only had like 30 seconds to do it? What would you say is like your proudest moment, or like the thing that made it all worth it? I mean, you've mentioned a couple stories, but I'm wondering, is there any different one?
Yeah. Like I mentioned, our mission is to strengthen families and we do that with our products, but we couldn't do it without our team. And strengthening families, you know, on our team is a huge priority for us.
Yeah. Number one place to work.
Yes.
Salt Lake City.
Yes. Number one place to work for women in the country for our size of business. And that is, I would have to say, probably my proudest achievement, because I might have mentioned that the business my husband and his buddies were building wasn't working. You know, he was building something.
I don't know if you did. We'll have to go back.
But, you know, I think part of the magic that helped us turn that seed of an idea into a profitable business were having diverse voices on the team. They needed women. They needed moms to speak up and be able to, like, help direct the direction that we were going with the business. And so having, you know, women on our team is a huge priority. And then supporting parents, fathers and mothers, in making family the priority, but also building an exciting, profitable, amazing business.
Yeah.
And so creating a culture that supports both of those things was a huge priority coming right out of the gate for my husband and I. And so now, you know, almost 10 years later, to see it working the way that we had hoped, and then winning awards, being recognized for that. That's just,
but being number one in the country. And how do you build a team like that? One of my things to kind of set that up is culture is such a buzzword in the business space that most of the time you either miss it or you get lost in the details. And I've had a ton of conversations with that, but the culture of a number one place to work for women and moms in the country. How do you do that? That's insanity.
Well, you have to have a really clear vision of what that's going to look like, or like what are the values that are getting you there? Actually, it has morphed over the years as like the business has grown up. COVID changed a lot of how, you know, we work, because we used to be all in office and now we're a virtual, like, remote based company.
Yeah.
But, you know, it just, if you know who you are and you know you're not going to be a good fit for everyone, and you don't try to be the thing for everyone, and you can stay true to your values, that's the key. You know, it's, when you think of culture, like, we lived in France a couple of times. France is a very different culture than the U.S. I love it. Okay. Not everyone loves it, right? Okay.
Fair enough.
Chapbooks, the culture we built at Chapbooks, I love it. Our team loves it. A lot of people really love it, but it's not for everyone. And, you know, if you're building something that you're trying to cater to what everybody wants, you're going to get diluted. So you have to stay really focused and concentrated on your vision and who you're serving.
Mm.
And, you know, we feel really good about serving parents because that's what we are.
Yeah.
And our whole company is about serving parents, and it's been a win-win for us.
And so, and I love that. Have you ever had that moment in business? Like you might have as your mom, like, oh dude, what did we do?
Like, oh yeah.
In the culture and trying to do that.
No. The culture, I love the culture so much. In fact, it allowed me this summer to take, parental leave. Oh. I'm not getting maternity leave anymore. That ship has sailed. But, you know, and it is a privilege probably of a founder that I get to say, you know, I'm putting myself on parental leave, because we had a big summer. I had a daughter leaving on a mission. My youngest son was really struggling with some things. Okay. You know, as a working mom, being gone all day, you know, we had a lot of support. We had help at home, but I just really felt like I needed to be home. And so, because of the culture that we have and we hold dear, you know, and also because I'm a founder, I think, you know, no one said, hey, this doesn't seem fair.
Yeah.
But it was in line with our values. And, you know, I have an incredible team to support as I stepped away for the summer to really pay attention to our family. And, and we've had other, you know, other instances where people have had extenuating family circumstances. And because we have a family first culture, we've been able to accommodate and help support, team members through whatever,
yeah,
comes your way, because life is, you never know what's going to happen.
Yeah. And you got to have
curveballs.
And having that culture, I mean, I think you just keep people longer. I mean, I'm sure your turnover is extremely low.
Yeah, well, but it is natural to have turnover in a business. Yeah, this was actually one of the hardest things for me as we went from startup with our like core team of rock stars, and you helped us get us there. And, you know, we've been at this almost 10 years, and it's normal for there to be turnover. And
of course,
that
of
was
course.
Really hard for me because you feel so much like almost like a family going through this like incredibly like.
Yeah, you were building something crazy. Yeah.
Yeah. But it's okay. It's like that's the natural evolution. Like my kids are leaving me now. Like I said, I have 7 kids. I only have 2 that are technically live at home right now.
Yeah.
And that's a hard transition. But there's you accept that that's like natural. That's a natural progression. Yeah. Then you're just like, okay, the ebb and flow.
Yeah.
And different stages of business require different types of team members too. So
that's well, and I just love that. I love the story of Chapbooks. I love the mission. So I really appreciate it, Vanessa, taking the time.
It was fun to chat with you. Thanks.
Before I let you go, I mean, obviously, let everybody know where they can find Chapbooks, if they want to follow you, where they can get your book, all that good stuff.
Yeah, chapbooks.com. Download the Chapbooks app. I'm at Vanessa Quigley on Instagram. I also am the host of the Mom Force podcast. So we have an amazing guest talking about all things mom life, and it's a lot of fun.
Wonderful. Thank you so much, Vanessa.
Yeah.